Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 643, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This broadcast is being recorded on August 3rd of the year 2008, and like For the Record 641 and 642, it's going to go into the new, improved, more professional, user-friendly of the Spitfire websites. We're going to begin by reading an article about, it's just, you talk about strange political bedfellows. One of the recently recorded Miscellaneous Articles and Updates programs described a guy who was associated with the World Church of the Creator. That's a Nazi slash white supremacist group whose company was supplying roughly a quarter of the meat to the school, the children's school lunch programs. And apparently he was supplying bad meat to the children's school lunch programs. A lot of the kids who are dependent for midday nutrition, so to speak, on those lunches are minority children, children who are Latino or African-American. And one wonders about this guy who was supplying tainted meat to the roughly a quarter of the school lunch programs. He was associated with a white supremacist organization. Was he doing that on purpose? Was this sort of low-level biological warfare? And again, one wonders also about the following. This is an article from Fox News. It's by Loman Saman. It's from July 30th of 2008. Woman with ties to white supremacists represents school for blacks and Hispanics. A Florida woman who has been married to both the former head of the Ku Klux Klan and the creator of a notorious white supremacist website is working as a spokeswoman for a school that aims to lift underprivileged black and Hispanic children out of poverty. An executive with an organization that tracks hate groups calls the employment of the woman, Chloe Black, an untenable position and unbelievable, unquote. Black, the wife of former KKK leader David Duke, is now married to Don Black, the creator of the white power hate site Stormfront. Chloe Black is currently employed as an executive assistant at Florida Crystals, a sugar conglomerate whose owners, the Fanjul brothers, F-A-N-J-U-L, have donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to help build a new campus for Glades Academy. Glades is a charter school for the children of African-American and migrant workers in Pahokee, a rural town in Palm Beach County. Billionaire Jose Pepe Fanjul's wife, Emilia, is chairman of the board of Glades Academy, and she hired Black to help promote the school. Reports suggest that Black's salary from the school may be going to support her husband's activities on the hate site, as Don Black has had no clear source of income for some time. So, Chloe Black, the former wife of David Duke, who may very well be an intelligence operative of some kind, as we've looked at in AFA Program 13 and also a miscellaneous archive show, Is Duke a Spook? Chloe Black, now married to Don Black, the creator of the Stormfront website, is promoting a charter school, working for a charter school that is for black and Latino children. One wonders, is she simply using that, as has been alleged, as a vehicle for helping to support Don Black, or is there something else in mind? It'd be interesting to see what happens to the kids at the Glade School. Certainly, at the very least, a case of strange political bedfellows. We're going to update another case of those strange political bedfellows in yet another Miscellaneous Articles and Updates program. We talked about a secessionist organization in Vermont, which looks to make Vermont an independent country, an independent republic, and they're networking with the League of the South, although the League of the South represents itself as simply a Southern heritage organization. In fact, it has, surprise, surprise, definite racist slash white supremacist links. And there's a, in one of the programs, I think it was For the Record program 191 went into that. It'll be annotated in the description for the Record 643. A little more about the Yankees from Vermont networking with Confederate recidivists. This is from the Southern Poverty Law Center that you heard referenced in the first article in this broadcast. This is by Heidi Byrick of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Their intelligence report, North Meets South. Vermont secessionists meet with racist League of the South. It reads in part, In 2003, the Second Vermont Republic sprang up to push for the independence of Vermont, a tiny, idyllic northeastern state with fewer than 630,000 residents. In its seemingly quixotic quest, SVR took up the mantra that small is beautiful, arguing that secession would lead to sustainability, ecological balance, an end to military entanglements overseas, and a better life. SVR activists designed a new green flag for Vermont and started selling T-shirts, particularly popular with the state's many tourists, that read U.S. out of Vermont. But in recent months and years, SVR's actions have gone from way out to worrying. Starting in 2005, SVR leader Thomas H. Naylor, along with SVR's very close ally, the Cold Spring, New York-based Middlebury Institute, that is headed by longtime leftist Kirkpatrick Sale, began openly collaborating with a collection of Southern extremists to build a national secession movement. SVR's disturbing new partner is the White Supremacist League of the South. The Alabama-based group is against interracial marriage, believes the old Confederacy never surrendered, and wants to reestablish, quote, the cultural dominance of the Anglo-Celtic people and their institutions, unquote, in a newly seceded South. By the way, there are links between this organization and the League of Conservative Citizens. The League of Conservative Citizens is the Council of Conservative Citizens also was recently, one of their meetings was recently attended by Chloe Black, the wife of Don Black and the ex-wife of David Duke, whom you heard about in the first article. By the way, David Duke, lest I forget, David Duke was one of the guests of honor at a Holocaust denial conference that was staged in Iran under Ahmadinejad in late 2006. And just think about an organization that or a country that maintains those sorts of viewpoints working on nuclear weapons. And the recent the sad thing is that the recent national intelligence estimate that Iran has suspended its nuclear weapons development program has been rejected by just about everybody. Even China has blown the whistle on that one at the United Nations. I suspect that among the reasons for that was simply the fact that we're heading for not only a major and even expanded warfare in the Middle East, very possibly nuclear warfare, would collapse what's left of the international equities markets. I've also noted that the author of that was one Von Van Diepen. I'd like to know more about him. It's a nice Anglo-Saxon name, isn't it? Back to the subject of the Second Vermont Republic and the supportive Middlebury Institute. Those institutions are networking with the white supremacist sort of neo-Confederate League of the South. There is a on the homepage of the Middlebury Institute's website, there is a compendium of secessionist organizations of one kind or another, and it will come as no great surprise to see as among the secessionist organizations that is listed by the Middlebury Institute, which again is networking with the Second Vermont Republic and the League of the South, is, surprise, surprise, the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization. Now, that's the group that embraces, among others, first of all, its head is Carl von Habsburg, the heir to the House of Habsburg, whose father, Otto von Habsburg, the previous heir to it, was a member of the Free Rudolf Hess Foundation and also a far-right member of the European Parliament. Carl von Habsburg, the head of the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization, is married to Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza, the heiress to the Thyssen-Bornemisza Empire, the Thyssen interests, one of the principal elements of the Underground Reich and the Bormann Capital Network. Among the unrepresented peoples who are being championed by the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organizations are the Tibetans, the Native Hawaiians, the Lakota, of course the Palestinians, and, surprise, surprise, the Afrikaners. Yes, those poor, dispossessed white supremacists from the Bruderbond and the old apartheid regime who were working with people like Larry Ford and apparently, to some extent at least, Stephen Hatfill. That's the fact that the Afrikaners have been included in the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples sort of League of Unrepresented Peoples is an indication of the real nature of that particular organization. And again, I've done a lot of work on the UNPO. more about some of the interesting networking done by white supremacist organizations. This is from an NBC News investigation of July 16th of 2008, White Power Groups Recruiting from Military. It's by Jim Popkin, an NBC News senior investigative reporter. It reads in part, white supremacist groups have recruited 203 people who served in the U.S. military or who claim to have U.S. military backgrounds, according to a new report by the FBI. The unclassified FBI intelligence assessment issued last week and obtained by NBC News cautions that white power extremists are trying hard to recruit active duty soldiers and recent veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. White supremacist extremists hope to revitalize the white supremacist movement by exploiting anti-government sentiment among opponents of the overseas conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, unquote, the FBI report states. It adds, however, that the effort is not going particularly well. Skipping down. FBI reporting indicates extremist leaders have historically favored recruiting active and former military personnel for their knowledge of firearms, explosives, and tactical skills, and their access to weapons and intelligence in preparation for an anticipated war against the federal government, Jews, and people of color, unquote. And it's not just veterans who are drawn to the cause. Quote, FBI cases also document instances of active-duty military personnel having volunteered their professional resources to white supremacist causes, unquote, the report states. The FBI finds that, quote, an estimated 19 veterans, approximately 9% of the 203, have verified or unverified service in the ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, in a For the Record series titled Specialized Knowledge and Abilities, I talked about the propensity of various fascist groups to recruit from among the military. The sad and scary thing is that over the decades, of course, our national security establishment has networked with various Nazi and fascist and white supremacist elements, ranging from the aforementioned Afrikaner Bruderbund during the Cold War, and apparently to a certain extent afterward, at least through people like Larry Ford. And then, of course, taking in the Galen organization, the Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit featuring thousands of SS and Gestapo veterans, the Crusade for Freedom, in which, among other things, not only Nazi and fascist veterans of World War II, but entire SS intelligence units were imported into the United States, and that was effected by people who were to become the cream, so to speak, of post-war American political leadership, people like Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, the elder George Bush, Alan Dulles, William Casey. Featured in that program, and of course, elements of the Borman Network, the Project Paperclip scientists, some of them war criminals of the First Order, were all brought into the United States. It may be one of the reasons why anthrax eventually became available to the people who perpetrated the anthrax attacks in 2001. And the strains of anthrax that were used in those attacks were indefinitely U.S. BW research strains. So it should not come as too great a surprise. Updating another story, some interesting deaths in the news. Obviously, in For the Record 642, we took a look at the suicide or apparent suicide of Bruce Ivins, a suspect in the anthrax attacks. Authorities are now considering closing that investigation. Yet in the Fox News article that we read in 642, it mentioned that there were about four suspects all told, if we include Stephen Hatfield, who appears to be approaching exoneration in connection with that investigation, and the late unfortunate Bruce Ivins. That still leaves two more people connected to Fort Detrick who were focal points of the investigation. So it'll be interesting to see how much comes out about that. Larry Ford, of course, blew his brains out back in 2000. There are a number of different programs dealing with Larry Ford. A key eyewitness in the early 2008 assassination of Benazir Bhutto, a former prime minister of Pakistan who was trying to once again assume the Pakistani leadership, well, that witness has now been gunned down. From a blog site, which will be annotated in the description for the Record 643, the following comes from a July 24, 2008 article, Key Eyewitness in Benazir Bhutto Assassination Case Killed. Khalid Shahanshah, a key eyewitness in the Benazir Bhutto assassination case, and the chief security officer to her husband, Asif Zardari, the leader of ruling Pakistan People's Party, was shot dead at his door. According to a report in the Urdu-language newspaper Roznama Nawi-il-Waqt, car-borne assailants fired 6 bullets into Khalid Shahanshah in Karachi. In the image below, Khalid Shahanshah is seen standing next to Benazir Bhutto as she addresses her last public rally just before the assassination. Of course, that is from the blog site, which will be annotated in the description to the program. So who shot him and why? I don't think they're going to be labeling this one as suicide, folks. Certainly somebody wanted him dead. Who and why remains a matter of conjecture. There's an awful lot going on in Pakistan. A couple of very bright, promising students who were in the forefront of research into human disease and environmental issues were murdered in London. This from the Daily Telegraph, a United Kingdom newspaper. French students, this is from the Daily Telegraph of July 3rd of 2008. French students murder. Victims were, quote, two of the brightest students of their generation. It's by Richard Edwards and Rupert Neat. And it reads in part, Laurent Bonomo and Gabriel Ferré, both 23, were in the second year of a 3-year master's degree in bioengineering in France. They had won internships to take part in a 3-month research project into chains of protein with DNA at London's Imperial College. The pair arrived in May and were just a few weeks from returning home when they were killed. And then it talks about these particular students. Who killed them and why? Again, doing research into chains of protein within DNA. Two of the brightest students of their generation at the forefront of research into human disease and environmental issues. Well, I wonder what they were looking into. At least one clue here, skipping down. On a personal website, Mr. Ferré, F-E-R-E-Z, admitted that his personal life was, quote, less successful than I had expected, unquote. In London, he was working on the production of ethanol from bacteria for use as a biofuel. Well, in For the Record program 641, we took a look at the fact that the Fischer-Tropsch process, the hydrogenation process developed by IG Farben in conjunction with Standard Oil in the run-up to World War II, actually in the 1920s, that was the run-up to World War II, but it was a long run up to World War II. One of the applications of the Fischer-Tropsch process involves the channeling of the carbon dioxide that is produced by the Fischer-Tropsch process to produce clean fuels into producing bacteria who will generate ethanol. Because from the standpoint of global warming, there's an awful lot of non-friendly CO2 that's produced by the Fischer-Tropsch process, but if you channel that into adjacent bacterial growing vats or whatever, then you can use that to help generate bacteria who will produce ethanol, kind of a win-win scenario. And that appears to be, to a certain extent, what Mr. Ferré was working on. So what were they working on precisely past that point? Who killed them and why? Well, it's what I've called for many, many years on this broadcast, food for thought and grounds for further research. Moving into the realm of nutty fundamentalist religion and what I believe is eventually going to be an intersection with the UFO phenomenon, a former astronaut, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who, by the way, is the founder of the Institute of Noetic Research, the Noetic Research Institute. That's an organization that specializes in New Age inquiries or the funding of New Age, quote, research, unquote. Dr. Edgar Mitchell has claimed that, our brothers from space are indeed among us. This is from a news.com.au website. Moonwalker, it's from July 24th of 2008. Moonwalker claims alien contact cover-up. And people who hear this will have heard 5 successive broadcasts, For the Record 639 and 4 old supplemental broadcasts, For the Record broadcasts, dealing with the UFO phenomenon and the ET myth. This one reads in part, former NASA astronaut and moonwalker Dr. Edgar Mitchell, a veteran of the Apollo 14 mission, has stunningly claimed aliens exist. And he says extraterrestrials have visited Earth on several occasions, but the alien contact has been repeatedly covered up by governments for 6 decades. Dr. Mitchell, 77, said during a radio interview that sources at the space agency who had contact with aliens described the beings as, quote, little people who look strange to us, unquote. He said supposedly real-life ETs were similar to the traditional image of a small frame, large eyes, and head. Chillingly, he claimed our technology is, quote, not as nearly as sophisticated, unquote, as theirs, and again quoting, had they been hostile, unquote, he warned, quote, we would be gone by now, unquote. Dr. Mitchell, along with Apollo 14 Commander Alan Shepard, holds the record for the longest ever moonwalk at 9 hours and 17 minutes following their 1971 mission. Quote, I happen to have been privileged enough to be in on the fact that we've been visited on this planet and the UFO phenomenon is real, Dr. Mitchell said. Quote, it's been well covered up by all our governments for the last 60 years or so, but slowly it's leaked out, and some of us have been privileged to have been briefed on some of it. Quote, I've been in military and intelligence circles who know that beneath the surface of what has been public knowledge, yes, we have been visited. Reading the papers recently, it's been happening quite a bit, unquote. By the way, I would note in this regard, although I'm not going to linger on it in this particular program, there was an op-ed column in, of all newspapers, the New York Times itself, the old gray lady this past Tuesday, in which Nick Pope, who was a former Royal Air Force colonel who had headed up the British Ministry of Defense's investigation into UFOs and who claims, yes, our brothers from space are real and they're here. This didn't mention our brothers from space, but it mentioned that failure to investigate the UFO phenomenon could lead to espionage and or terrorism being successfully perpetrated against the United States. And that also noted an uptick in, quote, UFO sightings, unquote. And I, as listeners to this program will by now know, of course, I believe UFOs are real, but it's the ETs who are the okey-doke. But at some point when the world is devastated either by nuclear war, which may soon begin in the Middle East, at least soon being within the next several years, and in which case, well, I think we'll see a dovetailing between the New Age philosophy and perhaps certain fundamentalist Christian and certain fundamentalist Islamic philosophies and perhaps some others as well, the sort of end-time philosophies in which, yes, you know, the end times are upon us and it will be a devastating war and the infidels will be killed and a lot of good folks will be killed, but then eventually the righteous will descend on us from where? You know, the 12th Imam up from out of that well where he's supposed to be sleeping or hibernating or whatever he's been doing down in that well, sort of a wellness advocate, and Jesus will come down, and you know, or our brothers from space will come down, or the children of light will come down, or the people who live in the middle of the earth will come back out of the middle of the earth, or whatever, and quote UFOs unquote and other advanced technology, which to an ignorant and desperate population will look like miracles and or something from another world, these will be used to basically convince people if they just get down on their knees, and I mean get down on their knees and don't think about getting up off of their knees, they will be taken care of, basically. We're going to look at some sort of really horrible scenario, so watch out for the UFO op. UFOs are real, but they're no brothers from space. And with all due respect to Dr. Edgar Mitchell and the Institute of Noetic Sciences and the others, keep your eyes peeled. And there will be a reference in the description for the Record 643 to this op-ed column in the New York Times this past Tuesday by Nick Pope. And I guess this past Tuesday would have been the 29th of July of 2008. Speaking about fundamentalist religion and some of the damage that can come from that, this probably should have been included in an update to September 11th and related matters. It probably will be. I spoke briefly in For the Record 642 about the Muslim Brotherhood, that is an Islamic fascist organization that I've spoken about at great length in many broadcasts. It is the parent organization of, among other institutions, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. It was allied with the Axis powers in World War II. It then jumped in order to British intelligence, then to the Central Intelligence Agency. It was the parent organization of the Afghan Mujahideen during the first Afghan war against the Soviet Union. The Muslim Brotherhood is actively opposing a child protection law that has been facing passage by Egypt. The following is from the Christian Science Monitor of July 24th of 2008. It's an article by Liam Stack. Egypt's child protection law sparks controversy. Subtitled, Islamist opponents from the Muslim Brotherhood argue that the law imposes foreign values on Egyptians. It reads in part, since June, Egypt's government and Islamist opposition parties have been trading barbs over a new law designed to protect the rights of children. Reforms instituted by the law touch on issues ranging from children's legal status to personal health issues. The law was passed by Parliament, which is dominated by President Hosni Mubarak's ruling party, but the measure has spurred a debate over the competing roles of religion, tradition, and the state in the upbringing of children. The controversy is making waves in a country where 32% of the population is under the age of 15, according to a 2006 government census. The Muslim Brotherhood, a banned yet tolerated opposition group that holds 20% of the seats in the lower house, argues that the law violates Islamic law and imposes foreign values on Egyptians. Saad El-Khatani, the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood bloc in Parliament, says his movement is not opposed to the child law as a whole, rather, quote, just those provisions that run counter to the norms, customs, and nature of the Egyptian people, unquote. Aspects of the law that he takes issue with include articles that make it illegal to try children as adults, permit birth certificates for the children of unwed mothers, restrict corporal punishment, raise the marriage age to 18 years, and reinforce a ban on female circumcision. And by the way, female circumcision or female genital mutilation is sort of a euphemism. What they do, among other things, is they basically remove women's clitorises. Skipping down of that practice in Egypt, quote, purification, as it's called in the Islamic parlance, is a beautiful thing, said Mubaraka Ali Mohammed, an elderly woman. Quote, I have three daughters and we circumcised them all when they were 4 or 5 years old so they wouldn't get into trouble at school, unquote, she says, adding that they will soon circumcise her three-year-old granddaughter. Quote, it's the only way. If they weren't circumcised, they would be committing sinful acts that I would not approve of, she says. Egypt has one of the highest female genital mutilation rates in the world. According to a 2005 study conducted by UNICEF, 96% of women between the ages of 15 to 49 who had ever been married are circumcised. A recent study by the country's Ministry of Health and Population also found that 50.3% of girls between the ages of 10 and 18 had been circumcised. Khatani says that the Brotherhood is not in favor of female circumcision, but opposes banning it because it is a tradition and should remain an option for medical reasons and beautification purposes. Goody. That's the same Muslim Brotherhood, by the way, that icon of the progressive sector, Cindy Lukma No Brains Sheehan, was stumping for during her Egyptian sojourn. Amy Goodman, well-known to listeners of the Pacifica Network, also has been doing programming quite sympathetic to the Muslim Brotherhood. Reminds me of a Theater of the Absurd play that I read many years ago by Edward Albee, in which two couples are talking, and one couple says, Harold, or whatever their boy's name was. Harold was such a nasty baby. When he was an infant, he was always playing with his wee-wee. And the other couple says, oh, that's horrible. Well, I hope you cut off his hands. And they said, no, we cut off his wee-wee. But he kept looking for it. He kept reaching for it anyway, so then we cut off his hands. Of course, that was Theater of the Absurd by Edward Albee. But the Muslim Brotherhood seems to be bringing that one to the world stage, so to speak, with a little bit of an assist, of course, from Cindy Lukma No Brains Sheehan. And again, the redoubtable Amy Goodman, at least redoubtable to some folks, has been doing programming favorable to the Muslim Brotherhood herself. How about that? That concludes For the Record program number 643, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. Again, this will be on the new improved Spitfire website, which will be a supplemental website to the old website. The material available there will be still available. Again, this will be recorded on August 3rd of 2008. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.